We live in a time of dwindling resources. We're all aware that the prices of energy are soaring, while at the same time supplies become shorter and shorter. Americans are constantly being reminded that often we're at the mercy of imports for the fuels our economy needs to function. Stanford University has always been a leader in research and advanced study, and it's here that the Stanford University Petroleum Research Institute, or SUPRI, has its home.
As far as who will be interested in this our project is that anybody who has heavy oil reserve, and that includes just about most major oil companies, and not only in the United States, but there are countries like Venezuela and Mexico, even Soviet Union, where there is heavy oil.
Dr. Subir Sanyal is one of the key people at SUPRI. Another is principal investigator and founder Dr. William Brigham.
We're coming up with new things that have never been done before. And of course, that's the purpose for doing research. And we're getting answers to problems that have worried people for a number of years.
SUPRI's purpose is to perform research on thermal recovery techniques for heavy oil. With funding from the U.S. Department of Energy and private industry, SUPRI plays the role of detective, examining the dynamics of reservoirs and discovering new and more efficient ways of recovering oil, which without special techniques would lie trapped in underground formations. For instance, one thermal recovery technique SUPRI is involved with is steam injection.
It turns out that steam injection is a very common process in the field, particularly in Southern California. But the problem there is, it is not a very efficient process because you're injecting steam and it's getting wasted because of gravity override or channeling process. Now, that is a problem. Now, our idea was to inject a foamer solution with the steam or before the steam or intermittently in order to actually stop the process of gravity override or at least reduce the process and reduce channeling and thereby improve the recovery process.
To test blocking agents, it's important to first understand how steam moves through a reservoir.
The purpose of the experiment is to study the effect of temperature on the absolute permeability of sands and sandstones to water. And this is related directly to steam injection and in situ combustion, where the temperature of the rock is heated up considerably and there's single or two-phase flow through it. I have an unconsolidated sand in a Hassler-type sleeve, confined with, right now, 2,000 psi confining pressure, and I pump distilled water through it at several rates, at several temperatures, and heat, cool, through several cycles, then change the confining pressure and go through the same process again. These are for the pressure transducers. I have three transducers measuring the pressure drop across the core and two measuring the pressure drop across the viscometer. These go to these five pressure transducer indicators, and then one channel from each is recorded on the chart recorder continuously. We have a low confining pressure gauge and a high confining pressure gauge. The confining pressure is kept constant throughout the experiment by use of a nitrogen cylinder. The water line pressure is kept at 200 psi downstream, and the upstream varies depending on the pressure drop across the core. And we also have a temperature recorder here. We see that we were 250, 150, and now we're at room temperature after cooling down. The core is pressurized with oil by use of a hand pump. And I have various high pressure valves controlling pressure relief valve and lines to the different gauges, as well as the a shutoff for the pump. As you might be able to see back here, we measure the efflux through a graduated cylinder.
This experiment is designed to test permeability blocking by surfactant foam slugs at high temperature and pressure. In this way, foaming agents may be measured for their ability to reduce the mobility of steam under conditions which closely resemble those taking place in a reservoir. The slug vessel which we see here is where the surfactant solution is stored before being injected into the sand pack. When the surfactant is injected into the sand pack, it is pressurized with gas, which causes it to foam in situ. The input and output pressures of the pack are monitored, as are the temperatures of both the slug vessel and the sand. This is the furnace which actually contains the sand pack. Since the furnace temperature can be accurately controlled, a variety of reservoir conditions may be simulated. As the surfactant is displaced by gas, the outflow is measured in a graduated cylinder. When gas breakthrough occurs, it's measured by a wet test meter. Here, steam rather than gas is used with surfactant. Like before, the surfactant is foamed in situ.
Foam and surfactants are the way we are looking at them is primarily for steam, all right? And the reason we're looking at them for steam is because we're interested in trying to improve the efficiency of steam. Steam tends to override in the reservoir. That is, here's a reservoir that's more or less horizontal. You inject steam, it doesn't go all through the reservoir. It tends to ride on the top. Because it tends to ride on the top, it doesn't contact all the reservoir before it gets back to the producing well. That makes it fairly inefficient. And it means that you have to cycle a lot of steam through the reservoir in order to recover your oil. Steam costs money. So you want to reduce that problem to the extent that you can. The whole purpose for the foam is for that the presence of foam will reduce the tendency to override, to channel towards that well. How far have we gone in this? There's been a little bit of work done in the field. But most of what has been done in the field uses foaming agents that are not very stable at high temperature. Remember, the temperatures we're talking about here are, at least 350 Fahrenheit and maybe as high as 550 Fahrenheit. And most of your foaming agents fall apart at 250 Fahrenheit. Well, so although there's been some work done with foams and foaming agents, most of the work that has been done in the field has been with foaming agents that really aren't stable for a very long period of time. A great deal of the effort that we have been focused on is to even find foaming agents that will remain stable at these high temperatures. Now, we have found some that appear as though they'll have a half-life in the order of 6 months or so, which is quite reasonable. We're quite excited, in fact, about this.
This model was designed and manufactured by SUPRI to produce data which will be directly applicable to thermal recovery projects. It's specifically designed to measure reservoir flow properties. Here, we see a single-layered flow experiment actually underway. 30 minutes have elapsed, and we can see the surfactant slug as it begins to displace oil from the sand pack. After 120 minutes, the surfactant is seen to have moved through the sand pack, displacing more oil and forming in situ foam at the far left. When 180 minutes have elapsed, the foaming is nearly complete, and the surfactant has displaced all but a small portion of residual oil to the right. The current experimental program in flow properties at SUPRI has already made a significant contribution, developing reservoir correlations which are more accurate than any previously available. Since the general objective of flow property research is to obtain data on the effect of elevated pressure and temperature on reservoir rock and crude, this data will allow better reservoir performance predictions for the enhanced oil recovery projects of the future. The first thermal recovery project to achieve widespread attention was not steam, but actually a process known as in situ combustion. In recent years, though, steam injection has become more popular, but SUPRI is involved with combustion because they're convinced it works.
Now, as far as in situ combustion is concerned, it has been tried off and on for many years, but unfortunately, there hasn't been a consistently successful sort of experience with in situ combustion. Some companies have tremendous success with in situ combustion. Others had a difficulty. And there are as many successful in situ combustion projects as failures. Now, our view is that in most cases when in situ combustion process was doomed or deemed to be a failure, it might have been not the fault of the process itself, but fault of the reservoir. In other words, wrong reservoir was chosen for the right process.
Let's first even recognize what in situ combustion is. Basically, what you're doing is injecting air into the reservoir. Now, what will happen is that the air will displace some of the oil. And because air is causes things to burn, the oil that hasn't been displaced will burn. Now, I know that people, when they first hear this, think of get envision some kind of a flame going on in the reservoir, and that isn't what it's like at all. It's really a great deal more like what you get in your charcoal broiler in your backyard. And basically, the system is not too much different than this cigarette, if you will. When I draw on the cigarette, I've got air going into it, and I've got a burn zone before you hit the air. Then you have a high temperature zone, and then beyond that, you have the combustion gases that have gone through the burn zone. Those are high temperature at the beginning. Now, what will happen is those high temperature gases will help displace the oil. Basically, an in situ combustion process is a process to allow a continual generation of high temperature gas to displace the oil. And you generate that high temperature gas through the process of burning that little bit of oil that's left behind. Now, this has been a process that's been known for a number of years. In fact, I think the first field test was started in about the mid-50s by, in fact, Hank Ramey, who's the chairman of our department. Well, there was a general mystique going around in the industry by the mid-60s or so, that in-situ combustion was simply not a viable process, which is very interesting because I know for a fact that every combustion process that Ramey was involved in made money, even in the days when the oil prices were way, way lower than they are now.
My work is concerned basically with one aspect of thermal recovery, which is called in-situ combustion. In order to study the reaction kinetics of in-situ combustion, we have to have a combustion cell with an isothermal condition along the reactor. Here, I have the combustion cell with a temperature probe at the center of the reactor and also a temperature probe at the outside of the reactor. We insert this combustion cell in this furnace, which can go up to 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Its temperature is controlled by a temperature controller and continuously recorded and also is read digitally here. After injecting gases, which are supplied by high pressure cylinders, the fuel is burned in this combustion cell. The produced gases are flowing through a separator and through a condenser. This condenser is basically a coil which is a coil. The produced gases are dried and then continuously analyzed by three gas analyzers. Here we have a carbon monoxide analyzer, a carbon dioxide analyzer, and an oxygen analyzer. They continuously analyze the gases which are produced. And at the same time, these gases are continuously recorded on a three-channel recorder. A Fischer gas partitioner is used to double-check the results, and also the results are recorded here. These are the pressure gauges for input and output pressure, and there is a pressure transducer here and a pressure indicator here. The pressure is also continuously recorded on this two-channel recorder along with the results of the flow rate, which are continuously recorded by a mass flow controller. A wet test meter is used to double-check the results of the mass flow controller and also to measure the cumulative gases produced.
This experiment is actually the predecessor to the small reactor vessel that Roz was showing you. And this reactor is analogous to the small reactor vessel he showed you, except it's much larger, of course, and actually has a dynamic burning front, which simulates the sort of process going on in an oil reservoir. In this experiment, we actually pack this entire tube with your with our sand and the oil, clay, other ingredient, water pop sometimes, mixture that we want to analyze the reactions for in this experiment. And it is packed solidly up to this point where this resistance heater will be able to start the reaction. And in this experiment, we actually place this tube within this large apparatus here and insulate it very well on the outside of the tube and heat the entire tube with heating tape controlled by these temperature controllers so that we can achieve an overall temperature of about 150 degrees, which is similar to your reservoir conditions.
This graphic shows how temperature fronts act in a typical in situ combustion project. Is combustion a viable process? The key, it seems, is understanding.
We don't know as much about it as we ought to. And so we're doing quite a lot of work in situ combustion in an attempt to understand it better. In everything that we're doing, it's a matter of attempting to understand systems so that we can optimize them. Well, now, in combustion, understanding. The understanding of the reaction kinetics, the rate at which things react when they burn. How much is going to be there to burn? What sort of temperature levels we're likely to get? Ahead of the combustion front, you always have water condensing, and therefore you have what is commonly called a steam plateau, because water condensing is nothing but steam condensing, and therefore it's a steam system up ahead of the combustion front. The nature of the steam plateau. We've done a good deal of work in this in an attempt to elucidate the basic mechanisms of these systems, not because we're just interested in the basic mechanisms, but we've got to do that before we can engineer to maximize these systems.
Enhancing SUPRI's own research capabilities is a modern computer system which is serving in a number of ways.
Computer is being used in SUPRI in three different ways. One is the classical means where you're doing a mathematical analysis with the help of the computer, or statistical analysis with the help of the computer. Next, we're using computer for data gathering as experiments are being run. And number three, for data display and information processing. For example, we have got very strong capacity, for example, of doing graphics through computer. We also have capability of doing typing of reports through our computers. And also processing the information that we gather, hundreds of pages of data that we gather in our experiments. So today, you can't live without a computer. And finally, we came to that conclusion and we bought a computer system.
The list of SUPRI projects in enhanced oil recovery is impressive. But besides investigating the mechanics of processes such as in situ combustion or reservoir flow properties, SUPRI is concerned with how data from the laboratory will help the oil industry in the field. For instance, a field test of the foaming technique SUPRI has developed will soon be underway in Southern California. SUPRI students are also examining the basic economics of thermal recovery.
My particular work with SUPRI is to deal with the economics of in situ combustion of steam injection. And what I've been doing the last year at Stanford is to try to develop a method or a means in which an engineer can assess a heavy oil prospect and try to decide which process, in situ combustion or steam injection, he should employ for that particular lease. And I've been trying to use equations and correlations that have been found in published literature that are common to most engineers. And it's essentially rehashing or rearranging old approaches and giving it a new face and streamlining a lot of the work that has been presented in the literature in the past 15 years. Well, with thermal recovery, it's been shown, at least as far as heavy oil is concerned, that recovery can be anywhere between 15% of the original oil in place and 40% of the original oil in place. And in some instances, it has been even higher. Usually, these processes are employed after primary production, which means just putting a pumping unit on or free-flowing the wells. You employ these processes to recoup more oil out of the ground. Now, thermal recovery, not only there's not only thermal recovery that is involved, but there are chemical additives and foaming additives which can be employed. Other methods are like water, hot water flooding, CO2 miscible flooding, and there's a whole host of other enhanced recovery methods. But thermal recovery so far has proven to be the most economical and provides the greatest return on their investment, on a company's investment.
Domestically, our goal is to come up with a technology that is freely available to the public, so not only the major companies, but any independent company can benefit from the results.
So this is SUPRI, a research institute playing an important role in recovering oil to help meet our future energy needs.